Welcome, Pinto and Sean Bean patrons. Welcome to Extra Beans.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for your support. It's absolutely pivotal.
And welcome to Extra Beans.
Yeah, welcome to Extra Beans. I've got to remind myself what we've done. We did hiking, didn't we? But what else have we done?
We did hiking. We did
Queen Victoria.
Archery. Was that the previous
batch?
Yes,
and seagulls. We began July with seagulls from good old Dr. G.
We did, didn't we?
Yeah. Which I was pleased because I am in a seagull zone.
In your life right now?
Well, this is where we live. We don't... The seagulls... This is not pigeon world around here. This is very much... The seagulls are in charge. It's not... Whereas London is...
Well, London's an uneasy truce between the seagull and the pigeons.
In places, yes.
Yes. A truce written and enforced by the squirrels. And it's as you say, it's a very, very uneasy truce, but it is holding. It's holding for now.
Because they've given, basically, the seagulls have given Trafalgar Square to the pigeons.
They've given it up.
But they get most of Canary Wharf area.
But they are massing on the Strand, though, aren't they, as we speak?
They're so massing on the Strand.
Maybe they are planning on taking over to annex Trafalgar Square at some point. We don't know.
Completely.
Yeah.
The Canary Wharf thing, of course, is controversial because, of course, that belonged to the Canaries. Where are the Canaries? They're trapped in the large pyramid at the top of it. That's where they are. 4 million Canaries in that pyramid. And they're not in a good mood either.
I think the swans kind of hold the balance of power. So whichever side the swans will fly behind,
yes,
tend to get their way.
Well, you assume that means they have sort of a regal... Yeah,
the swans have got the royal parks.
Yeah.
They've got the royal parks. They've got the royal seal of approval. Mm-hmm. A swan can walk down Pall Mall.
Yes.
Which no other bird can do without being taken out by snipers.
And is permitted to herd tourists across Lambeth Bridge.
That's right, yes. Mm. And of course, making a swan-shaped cake is still completely illegal. Do not make a swan-shaped cake.
Unless it's Whitsun.
In which case, you have to make a swan-shaped cake. If you make a swan-shaped cake with no eggs in it and call it a cookie, you'll simply have your legs chopped off and swapped round.
Which can be quite refreshing.
Some people think it's worth it.
So here's some more stuff from our seagulls episode.
Yes, please.
You know, like people say the sun goes up in the west and it sets in the east.
Mm. Sorry, Henry's talking Quadon planets.
I'm talking. I meant on Crotonia,
yeah,
which is the capital city.
But we were talking about eyeballs earlier on, and everyone knows that your eyeballs are like they're linked up. The nerve goes the other way, and it's linked to the other side of the brain. So actually, everything's the other way around.
Exactly.
Yeah, so you see it. Yeah.
And east and west doesn't mean anything because left and right depends. Just depends which way you're facing, doesn't it? East and west.
The world is famously west-handed.
It's like slightly west-handed. Mm. Yeah, people say the sun's. Well, some people say the sun rises in the east, sets in the west.
Yeah, go on.
The Earth goes around the sun, right?
Mm-hmm.
But effectively, the sun goes around the Earth. I mean. Who cares if it actually the Earth goes around the sun? I mean, to all intents and purposes, the sun goes around the Earth. So who cares if it actually doesn't? Do you know what I mean?
Well, anyone involved in putting satellites in the sky or any kind of space exploration or indeed any physicist of any sort, I imagine.
Or the Quadons next time they come and visit.
I'm biting the 7-fingered Quadon wet hand that feeds me.
But I think that's the difference between truly thick people and people who aren't thick. Mm. Which is thick people go, okay, I don't understand this, so I do not believe it to be true.
Oh, right.
Whereas anyone with the smallest amount of intelligence goes, there are lots of things I can't understand. I just have to take it as read that people do know what they're doing because they're cleverer than me or they spent more time on it than me.
Every time you put Parmesan shavings onto a tagliatelle's pasta base sauce that you've made, like a mushroom tagliatelle you've made at home, every time that you, the amount of trust you're putting into the universe. What the heck is Parmesan? Do you know what I mean? You don't actually know. I don't know.
But you're aware of your own Parmesan ignorance.
But you're aware of your... And you take it on trust.
Mm-hmm.
That you put this odd, congealed, stinky sort of oblong...
Umami.
through what looks like something sort of a medieval knight's kind of gauntlet that's what looks like some medieval weaponry.
I mean, I feel I do understand what's going on there. I mean, I'm not...
What, with the cheese grater?
Yeah.
Depends which side of it you're using.
I think I'm across that.
Okay. But that's because you haven't seen the seventh side of the cheese grater, which you can only see if you're wearing a Quadon headset. That's the bit where the cheese actually goes through time.
So when you're grating a Parmesan, you're actually bringing cheese back from the past.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, which was smaller then.
Which was smaller then. Yeah.
Are either of you aware of a book called Jonathan Livingston Seagull? Have we talked about it on this pod before?
No.
No.
Are you aware of it?
No.
Jonathan Livingston Seagull was a book that we had it read to us at my school.
Fiction?
Yes.
It's an allegorical tale, apparently.
Yeah, it's a book that was massive in the 70s, I think. And the headmaster of my school was quite hippie-ish. And I think had been into it in the 70s and was into reading it to the kids in my school. It's about this seagull who's learning to fly, and it's an allegory for like Buddhist stuff. It's very kind of 70s New Age, I think.
So Wikipedia says it's about a seagull who is trying to learn about flying, personal reflection, freedom, and self-realization.
It's kind of like a lot of the kind of crap that's on the internet these days, but in the 70s, there was less of it, and it was more concentrated in books like that.
And it'd blow minds.
Yeah, it's sort of like self-help, mind-blowing book that was all allegorical. And I remember it's about the seagull who's learning to fly, and it's starting to enjoy flying. It really went into our imaginations, the kids. It was very powerful. I'll never forget that. Just the name of that book, Jonathan Livingston Seagull.
Mm.
And he's doing these dives, and he's getting better and better at diving, and he's enjoying it. It always made me wonder about whether animals like enjoy what they're doing. Do birds enjoy flying?
The author also wrote The Ferret Chronicles.
Doesn't sound quite as uplifting, does it? It's about a ferret, and he's trying to get... He does, you know, just like learning to enjoy the process of hiding in a farmer's trousers. Trying over and over again to get deeper into the farmer's trousers. What does it mean about...
How does it choose which leg to go up?
Exactly that kind of thing.
What does that mean?
Eternal mysteries.
Mm.
On the Wikipedia page is a list of... the different translations into different languages of this book, of which
I think it was
many.
Massive. Yeah.
And it was translated into Asturian, which I think is a Spanish language.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
And that's called Juan Salvador Gaviota.
Nice.
In Polish, it's simply called Miła.
Nice.
It's this kind of allegorical tale, and then it's just got lots of photos of seagulls in it. But it's very much seagull, like they're like uplifting, it's seagulls. When I picture that book, I picture like a blue backdrop and a beautiful white seagull. And it's very much not seagulls shitting on pensioners, attacking toddlers.
All the characters and events in Jonathan Livingston Seagull serve as an allegory for conveying classical human ideas about the world. Seagulls are people who, for the most part, are preoccupied with material wealth. Flying Seagulls is a style of human life based on the unshakable law of the pack, which does not allow us to go beyond the usual norms.
Okay.
Jonathan's desire for knowledge of the world is an attempt by an individual, an extraordinary individual, to learn the meaning of life.
That's interesting. The pack thing is interesting because, if you're at the seaside, they'll be in flocks and they mob, don't they? They attack in packs.
Do they?
But if they come into like Exeter city centre, they're very often on their tod. You know, if you see them out and about, most of the time they're on their own, I find. Maybe they're on walkabout or something.
You get them in London. You get seagulls outside of seaside areas. And it's weird. They just carry this maritime vibe, just the sound of seagulls. They really carry the essence of the sea with them wherever they go. So it's always feels quite weird when you see them in a town.
Sometimes when you hear, I find this in London, if you hear a flock of seagulls above, I taste fudge in my mouth.
You know that one of the fudge ships is in.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
In the Great Port.
Is that because you're regurgitating some fudge?
Into the mouths of my chicks, yeah.
Because, of course, evolutionarily, we were seagulls.
At some point.
So it was pretty close to them.
A brief seagull interlude, yes.
I think that was between whale and wolf, wasn't it?
It was between whale and wolf. It was as a punishment for attempting to be king of the seas. The sea is its own king.
Andrew emails.
Hello, Andrew.
In response to Henry's question about what to do about a dangerous dog, my grandfather advised that if you grabbed a dog by its front feet, you could pull the legs apart, killing it instantly.
I've heard that. It's really horrible, but also sort of wishbone thing. I assume it would kill them, but it'd be quite agonizing.
It's kind of like an old wives' tale slash urban myth factoid.
Yeah.
I think it's something to do with the bones pop, the solar plexus, the compressed air kind of explodes and shoots the entire spine up into the dog's brain. Like that. You know what I mean? I think
it's really horrible, whatever it is. It's also probably fantastically realistic if you're dealing with a staff that's much stronger than you anyway.
Fantastically realistic or unrealistic?
Unrealistic. Like if it's a staff biting and scrabbling and the legs are moving at a rate of knots and, yeah, it's not.
I think the trouble is that a myth was created, which was that if a staffy gets its jaws into your body,
there is a way out.
Even it can't release them.
Right. Yeah.
It's the lockjaw myth.
Yeah.
Even the staffy, with the best will in the world, that staffy is going to stay compressed on you until you bleed out.
Or you cauterize the staffy's head into your wound.
That's the only way of doing it.
You just have to decorate it so people think it looks like a sort of fleshy rosette.
That's one of the only ways out. Mm. But that, because of that horrifying idea, we had to come up with a counter myth.
Yeah.
Which is the myth of if you just pop it open.
Yeah.
Pop. Pow.
I think people tried the counter myth of just put your finger up its ass, but I think that people don't like that. So they needed something which is more brutal but not ass based.
I think I'd rather just die than have to put my finger up an ex-somebody's ass.
Oh, really? I think my European mainland roots are kicking in here because I'd have absolutely no problem popping one up.
But the trouble with that, of course, is that people started preemptively sticking their fingers up staffy's arses and then actually created more staffy attacks in the first place. You ended up in a vicious cycle, haven't you?
So I don't know if that's good advice. Probably not. I think, but I don't have any counter advice. I think just make your peace.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Just try and make your peace with the situation.
Just try and remain dignified.
Yeah.
Straighten your tie. Pull your socks up.
Yeah.
Sing Jerusalem.
Make sure your council tax is paid up. Let's get on the hotline.
Yeah.
There will be an option for in the numbered list for I'm in the middle of a fatal staffy attack and time is pressing. But it usually be number 7. It's quite far down the list.
Can I sort out the single person discount for my partner?
Also, if you do have time after that, you could try and close off your Boots reward card. And if you give them a forwarding address, they can forward whatever value of you have left on your Boots reward card in a product of your choice. So it could be as much toothpaste as you can buy.
Yeah. Sent to a charity of your choice.
So, for example, it could be
Bernardo's is getting a meal deal.
Yeah. Oxfam's getting some Sensodyne. They're different.
Yeah. And the Red Cross is getting litres of conditioner.
Exactly. Oh, brilliant stuff. So, what else?
Let's not start that.
No, that's quite an interesting way of doing it, no?
should we all three try it? Let's try it. So, we've just had some stuff about seagulls. Here we go. Yeah.
Ben, I can't believe you actually said that.
Golly. Oh. You know me.
Oh, I thought I did. Oh. Yeah.
Anyway, okay. The next topic we talked about
archery.
Archery.
A quiver full of lukewarm banter.
A quiver full of soft arrows that don't penetrate their destination so much as gently nuzzle its brain and make it think of new ways of looking at stuff.
Yeah.
Idea arrows. Yeah. Shot straight out of our mouths and into your sort of mind.
Tell you who we didn't mention, I don't think, when we recorded about archery. Robin Hood.
I felt pleased about that, though.
Why?
That occurred to me afterwards, and I felt pleased about that.
Have we had Robin Hood as a topic?
No.
No.
And it sounds like Mike doesn't want to talk about him in public.
I do like Robin Hood, but someone like me is too drawn to things like Robin Hood.
Okay.
So
you think you're into it too much?
I think I have to resist. It's too route one. So I was pleased with William Tell. I don't think about William Tell very often.
No.
Yeah. I don't play William Tell in the garden. Do you know what I mean? I play Robin Hood in the back garden.
When you're by yourself?
Yeah, private time.
Just you and Egg.
You and Egg. Or Maid Marry Egg. As she is, isn't it? Oh. So.
Yeah, and Will Pamlet. Yeah. And we have high adventures.
It's okay. Daddy's having his de-stress time.
Just put your helmet on and shut the windows.
Yeah. So that feels like that's private. That stuff.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Good.
Fair. Mm. Okay, well, here's some more stuff from our episode about archery.
Yes, please.
When I was living in Crystal Palace, there was a family of foxes at the bottom of the garden.
Mm.
I lived in Crystal Palace for about 3 months, and I had this lovely, my flat had this lovely garden with this beautiful big tree, and it was amazing how much nature there was happening. I would literally watch squirrels.
Wow.
But I would just watch the squirrels scampering around this tree. It was just fantastic. And also, from my bedroom, I looked down on the roof of this shed.
Mm.
And in the day, I saw something which I barely think another human being has ever seen this. Mm. I could watch foxes sleep. I could watch them sleeping. Because they would, during the day, they're nocturnal.
Mm.
They would sleep on the roof of the...
They sleep on the roof?
Of this shed, yeah. In the garden.
Yeah, when I lived in Tooting, I had a fox that lived on... And we used to sleep on my shed.
Very, yes. So
when you say sort of barely any other human has seen it.
Yeah. What are the chances? The two of the only people that have ever seen this happen. That's one of the most incredible coincidences of all time. It was quite fun, isn't it, watching them sleep?
Yes.
I felt like I had a real privileged view of something that no one had ever seen. Anyway, there was a family of foxes down the bottom of the garden, and... One of the fox cubs died in the garden, and it was really horrifically tragic. It was very ill and sort of stumbling about, and I didn't know what to do. It's that weird thing of like, because I'm seeing it, I feel like I have some sort of responsibility or some sort of part to play. And that's when I went on Amazon and I said, how fast can you deliver me the heaviest headed shovel that you have? Oh, God. No. So,
a brace of throwing shovels from your window position.
I called up. The thing is, once you become, this is what Sharon had with this seagull. Once you become sort of like emotionally involved with an animal, it really messes you up. So, I've called various numbers of you call various numbers and you get put through to various. You're on hold and like that. There are various kind of. I just kind of Googled. I don't know who I ended up really talking to, but I ended up talking to a couple of people.
Did you end up ringing into Capital Radio and talking to Dr. Fox?
That was it. It was Dr. Fox. And he was like, thanks, I'd call Henry, and now we're going to play Foxy Lady. But eventually it's one of those things where it's like, kind of, no one's saying it, but the truth is nature is quite, you know.
Nature's going to happen.
Nature's going to happen, and, you know, the fox's siblings are probably going to be okay. The fox mother came and kind of, snuffled around it, but I thought, oh, maybe it's going to get rescued. Then the fox mother went off, and eventually, then it was a dead fox cub. God, but then it was what to do with it. And again, there were various there are government protocols about this. I remember googling it. There are sort of guidelines about what you can and can't do with a dead fox. Like, what do you do with a dead fox?
Mm. Well, I think I've mentioned this on the podcast before. This a fox died in our garden, and I rang the council, and they were just like, black bin.
Really? Was it black bin?
There was no protocol.
Well, maybe that was the protocol. But anyway, me and the people who lived in the flat upstairs ended up burying it at sea. And that's a story for next week, which involves smuggling a fox onto a P&O ferry. A dead fox.
Well, on my way home from work, we were talking about seagulls last week. Also, we had a bollocking from various people saying seagulls don't exist. There's no such thing as a seagull. They're just called gulls.
Oh.
I knew that would happen.
Come I off. Did it. Oh, yeah.
Also, we had bollocking saying that Chatsworth House is international trust property. I knew that as I said it. But I feel like I can't constantly caveat everything I say with...
It's probably bollocks. What we need is... a bit like a watermark on paper, we need to record at quite a low level. This is probably bollocks. This is probably bollocks. Probably bollocks. That was probably bollocks. What you're about to hear is probably bollocks. And so was the thing that you were hearing while I was saying that. That was probably bollocks. This is probably bollocks. That was probably bollocks. And we just need to record that throughout the whole show like a watermark.
Proper bollocks.
Proper bollocks.
I don't think there's anything wrong with saying seagull.
Oh! Hello.
Hey, hey, ho.
Just
because it's just part of language, and B, it's all right for there to be more than one way of saying something, right?
Yeah.
This is so good.
You know, yes. you don't have to say my wheels, you don't have to say my car, you don't have to say my vehicle. So why can't we say gull or seagull? And also, I think when people say seagull specifically, we all imagine a particular species of gull.
It's the herring gull
that is predominant
is that right?
In British beaches.
So are they saying that seagull is a tautology?
Yeah.
It would be like calling something a filthy rat. Well, it's just a rat.
Yes, although we're now going to get bollockings about the fact that someone's
going to say,
rat is really clean.
And actually, rats are actually incredibly clean and intelligent, and they actually do a lot of work for charity, which they don't like to talk about. Yeah. Oh, here we go. There's always, there's good and bad in all species. But one thing I would say is that the most dangerous species on Earth is actually... gorillas. They are fucking
and like those arms.
Those arms, they will fucking absolutely mash you up. Yeah, it's got to be said.
Patrick emails, there is no such thing as a seagull. Gulls may live by the sea, but no such genus exists. I fully expect Mike to accept this as fact.
No.
For Benjamin to flip-flop between semantics.
I accept that it might not be like a genus thing, but genus isn't the same thing as language, is it?
Good point.
Different thing.
Yes.
Not all languages, science glossary.
Are we finally getting into the culture wars?
I think so.
Is that what's happening?
I think so. But I don't know which side we're on at the moment.
No, we're flailing, but as long as we flail hard enough.
Because at the moment we're being presented with facts and reason and science, and we seem to be flailing against it.
We've got no idea
how to respond.
I think
we're on the wrong side.
Yeah. I don't know where to do this, Mike, but I'm... You said that Stephen Graham's good in everything he's ever done.
Yeah.
I might do a little Bonjo Nacy.
Oh, okay, go on.
Are you saying he wasn't that good in the Des Lynam story when he played Des Lynam?
Because you thought that was Des Lynam, but it wasn't. It was Stephen Graham.
It was Stephen Graham.
I think he might be Britain's best actor. So mm-hmm. I'm putting that out there.
Bit rude, by the way, present company. You've got Mike right here, and I was Policeman 3 and Patient 4.
Yeah.
Or vice versa.
And could Stephen,
not sure.
Could Stephen Graham say, I'd like a pint of lager, please, mate, as fast as you did?
What was that in again?
That was in Josh, was it?
That was in Josh.
Yeah. Pint of lager, please, mate.
You were playing a sort of a badass Lothario comedian.
Yeah, I was basically playing myself.
In a Trilby.
Playing myself. You know what? Often the sign of a great performance in something is it's almost as if it didn't happen because
it was so jarring.
It was so jarring that
you think he must be a family member. He must be. There must be some nepotism going on here somewhere. What's going? This is a prize winner? Why? Who is this person?
It's got to be some nepotism. He must be in it because it's something to do with the funding of the show. So we've just got to take it. Be grateful if this helped it get off the ground. It must be some sort of oligarch's. Sort of bastard nephew. My performance in that was so... I like to feel it was so real and so, maybe so good in a way that actually literally no one's ever mentioned it to me and, or said, you're good in that or I liked you in that or whatever. Like, literally no one. It's almost like it didn't happen. And I wondered if I'd been edited out. I'm not sure. I don't think I was edited out.
You were not edited out.
I wasn't edited out.
No, they tried, but it was too... Unfortunately, your role was pivotal to the story.
And I did too much physical damage to the set for them to not for continuity. They had to keep it in. Otherwise, just to make sense of all the cracks. But It's in a way similar in Policeman 4 in Patient 3 or vice versa. A lot of the time, you don't know that the acting's happened if it's really good. A bit like music. Often you don't know music's happening if it's really good.
Or MI6.
Fantastic example. Or MI6. By the way, I've recently come up with a good mnemonic for remembering which one's MI5, which one's MI6.
Okay.
Now, do you
By the way, but before you go ahead, we had a whole section where people sent these in a while ago.
What, mnemonics?
Really? Yeah, but MI5 and MI6.
Oh, did we?
Yeah.
Did we talk about it on the show?
I think so.
I think we might have done, yeah.
Anyway.
Well, I've got a new one.
Okay. Yeah.
MI5 is closer to home.
Yeah.
Because it's about home secret stuff.
Yeah.
And MI6 is a bit further away, so you add a number. Because it's far, far away. Do you know what I mean? It's just sort of very simple, but... Yeah. It's just that one just works, and it's not actually great content. Again, it's like my acting. It's sort of like it's a bit of a non-event because it actually just works. You shouldn't notice great acting. It should be like it's not happening because that's what real life is.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Well,
anyway,
my naysay, which I don't know why I'm doing this even. As I said, I think he's Britain's best actor.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Bit rude.
quick.
It hasn't stopped being rude.
And I love his accent and I love his way of speaking.
Yeah.
I really like it. And then I watched him in, he's in The Irishman, the Scorsese film.
You love his accent, you love his way of speaking. You patronising fuck. He's just a good actor. Oh, you love that he's...
What's patronising about saying I like an actor's voice?
Henry, you're really taking this best actor thing personally, aren't you? He was in The Irishman. He was a rival boss, wasn't he?
Yeah, he's like a New York union
buster. If he was really good in The Irishman, you wouldn't have known he was in The Irishman.
Well, that's what I was coming to say.
And
basically,
that's why I want to celebrate a new awards due. New
for
awesome
your performance
called,
in The Irishman.
It's called the Invisi Oscars.
Even you don't know whether or not you were in The Irishman.
For people that were so good in things that they were not sure if they were in them or not. And you get, yeah.
I'm just a plinth.
You get ordered a plinth. And it's your acting that tells you what's on the plinth when you receive it by acting it that well. Anyway, sorry, Ben, what are you saying?
What I'm saying is that obviously various film directors and things see him and go, he's amazing.
Yeah. Mm.
Cast him in the movie, and then they find out that he can't do an American accent for Toffee.
That is hard. That's hard going.
Was he going hard into it? Was he going like sort of like Bronx mafioso kind of?
It was Bronx meets Merseyside.
Bada bing, bada. Okay.
I'm going to put a cap in your ass. was that bad? Ever since I was born, I've always wanted to be in the mafia. Well, yeah, accents are—you can't learn them in a way.
I think there's a whole industry geared towards exactly that, isn't there?
Well, you can teach them. I would argue. And you can monetize that. Can you learn them? But let's put it this way:
that question is still to be decided.
Yeah? Were they using technology to age him or de-age him or to Irish him? Because they use a lot, famously in that film, they use a lot of digital technology to make people look Irish who weren't Irish, didn't they?
No, he was ISO actor in that he was just, he was the same as he is.
He
wasn't aged up or aged down. Well, all the makeup and CGI department raw dogged it.
Okay.
He was the kind of constant lighthouse around which all of the other aging and de-aging happened, I think. Yeah.
Okay.
It was that you needed someone who was just their age in the middle.
Yeah. Was he playing a baddie? Like a?
I think everyone in that film's kind of a baddie.
A career criminal.
A career criminal,
a senior
yeah.
figure in an organised crime group. And really, I'll leave it for you to decide if that's a baddie or not.
Oh.
Mm. Mm. Glorification of mafia and so on.
Hmm. Mm.
Maybe they're just standing up for their community in a way.
What are we saying? Well, I can't work out what we're saying about organised crime.
We're playing with some hot coals here.
Yeah. Yeah, no, we are.
Some hot, hot coals.
Yeah, but I don't think we want to come out as pro-organised crime, do we, as a podcast? As
at least no, exactly. That's what I felt. We were dancing around that.
I'm pro-organised crime.
I'll take the anti.
Well, of course, they recently discovered a hotbed of over 300 organised criminals working in a not-so-secret HQ right in the centre of London, talking about the Houses of Parliament. Ben, you know the fact you just said you were going through your old email accounts? That's just triggered a memory in me, which is
that you haven't replied to an email for 4 years.
Well, there's a few things. One is, you know, on your email thing,
yeah,
how many unread emails have you got in red?
3,290.
Bloody hell, that's a lot.
Yeah.
Is it?
That would stress a lot of people out. What have you got, Mike?
It's 14,435.
Oh, my God.
But I will get round to it.
Mike, you're beating me. I'm really, that's totally, like, damaged my own sense of my own mythology and all of our relative mythologies. Because I thought Ben's would be actually...
four.
Minus 70. He's pre-read emails he hasn't received yet, just in case, by getting an AI to mock up what people will probably say, which will be 90% true. That means there's a 10% margin of error, which still means he's ahead of the game.
Where are you up to?
I'm 10,532.
Okay. Oh.
Which has stressed out some people that have seen that. But so, Mike, I'm really impressed you're on 14,000. But what I was going to say was, what you reminded me of was the fact that I can't, my Hotmail account, which I used to have, which is my account which I've had since the beginning of the internet, has been permanently shut down to me. I literally can't get into it.
Because this is because a man stole your phone.
Because a man stole my phone.
Oh, because
No, but what happened was, I became obsessed with data security.
Yeah.
For about 2 days. And I came up with a brand new password system that was so complicated and brilliant that even the user himself wouldn't be able to access his own email. And I did it. My Hotmail account literally cannot be hacked because it cannot be accessed by anyone on Earth, including me.
You're the reverse Snowden.
I've reverse Snowdened it. Anyway, that's what happened. I came up with this brilliant system. And I've tried it so many times, I've been locked out, and literally Hotmail, there's no Outlook.com, whatever, Microsoft, there is no method for me to get into my emails. I can't, or at least there is a method, but it involves a kind of questionnaire, and I do it every couple of weeks, I have another go at it. It's like a really complicated questionnaire.
About yourself?
Essentially about myself.
First kiss. First nickname.
Do I prefer the oboe or the bassoon? Well, that sort of thing.
And these things can change over time.
Exactly.
I don't know when they took the data about, you know, what your oboe versus bassoon tastes were, you know.
Should we have given back Diego Garcia?
It's a big one.
How good was Andy Garcia in The Godfather 3?
I thought he was really good.
Yeah, I thought he was really good as well. Yeah. But that doesn't get me in.
No.
I've said that over and over again. It doesn't get me into my own Hotmails. But I've got my first ever... It's quite sad. I find it quite sad that there's all this information about me is locked in a kind of virtual sort of chamber somewhere in the ether.
Like your very soul.
My very soul, in a sense. Or my digi-soul. Welcome to the futuristic dystopian novel by Henry Packer. The digi-soul.
Can you find the tungsten box?
The man with digital gills.
And the man with digital fingers, or digi-digits.
Digi-digits.
Playing the didgeridoo.
Or didn't he?
So after a certain amount of time, all of those emails inside that account will be wiped, I guess. I think if you don't access an account for 3 years or something...
Well, that's what they say, isn't it?
That's what I'm worried about, though, is that it'll be... And all those memories... Because I remember the first ones I ever sent were to do with setting up a five-a-side game. So, to be fair, a lot of it was quite banal. That. But But it's literally my first ever, because I was there, hotmail.com, you know, I got Henry Packer at hotmail.com. And
this is where your memoirs are stored. I also have a Hotmail still, and I've just seen I've got more than 7,000 unread emails on that one as well.
Bloody hell. But basically, when I had my data stolen and this whole thing, I had this conversation with this guy in a bank who was all about, like, you've got to triple secure your passwords and do all this kind of stuff. So I came up with a kind of personal algorithm for my passwords. Mm-hmm. It is, to be honest, I've sort of got it working for the others, but I had teething issues at the beginning. So Hotmail, I forgot it, and I got locked out forever. Yeah, but no. So there's this questionnaire thing. It's stuff like, what was the last Hotmail email you sent?
Mm. Oh, that's hard.
Have you ever used Skype? Mm-hmm. Have you ever bought anything from Microsoft? Weird things like that. I think I'm getting them all right, but every time it just says no. Mm-hmm. And there's no one you can call. There isn't a helpline, which I find quite frightening, that you can't talk to anyone about this. They won't even give you an AI or a bot.
But why would they give you one, given that you paid them £0 for 20 years of an email address?
Thanks, Ben. It's really nice that someone's tooting the horn for big tech. Isn't it? It's really nice that someone's taken on the little guy on behalf of the global megacorps.
I just think your expectations might be a bit high for something you literally gave them nothing in return for.
And is it a coincidence that your T-shirt is in perfect shade of Microsoft blue?
It's a three-bean salad T-shirt.
It is a three-bean salad T-shirt. Of course, when we're talking about medieval battles, there's, of course, the most famous arrow, which wended its way into the skull of the last great Saxon king. Wasn't it?
King Harold.
There we go.
At the Battle of Hastings. That's a famous one.
Yes. Although that's one of those ones where it didn't actually happen, right?
It didn't actually happen, right? I don't think so.
I don't know. I feel like we've discussed 1066. I think we discussed 1066. It's probably every 3 weeks, and
none of us have bothered to look it up in the meantime.
And we have. I know that all of us have listened to sort of podcasts about it.
Yeah.
Moved it up content. Still, loads none of it. It's really sticking. Not really sure.
It's sort of like it. Knowledge adheres to my brain a bit like moths do to one of those stickers you put in your cupboard. Mm-hmm. Knowledge gets stuck to it, dies. Mm-hmm. And then I throw the whole lot away and get a new sticker out. That's not how it works. But I do hope to maintain decent level of trouser integrity.
through your approach to knowledge.
Through my approach to knowledge. Also, I didn't think an arrow would go in your eye because the eye is very good at, you know, like if there's an insect or something, you've just got to go like that.
Do you think Harold would have instinctively blinked and it would have stopped?
You're always going to flinch faster than an arrow.
I think so, yeah. Mm. It's quite rare that anything actually goes in your eye. And also the way the skull is built, it's built to defend your eyes, isn't it?
From an arrow?
Well,
from a beach ball, yeah, but they're not firing beach balls.
I tell you what, I did. I was on a line bike the other day. Mm. A fly or wasp flew directly into my ear, which wasn't very nice.
But compared to getting shot in the eye with an arrow...
It's the modern equivalent.
It's the modern urban equivalent. And what a tapestry that would make.
The William Tell Overture.
Can shoot an apple off of my son's head. Can shoot an apple off my son's head.
Where will I get the apple?
My son's head.
Nottingham or a fruit or a strawberry. Nottingham or a fruit or a melon or an apple. It really is an apple. It really is a fucking apple. Genuinely off his head, genuinely
is
off
one of
his
those
head.
Big cooking apples, or is it one of the smaller, like a little sort of pink lady or something?
It's like a jazz. I think we go for a jazz. Not one of the nice ones. That one I'll eat. Isn't it tense? Yes, it is. I like my son. Quite keen on him. Is it really going to be an apple? Is it? Yes, it is.
But secretly, I don't like my son. I don't really like my son.
Really expensive to have a son. Really expensive. Especially in Norway or wherever this is, or Holland. In the Middle Ages or whenever this is happening. It's really expensive to have a son. So anyway, it's to kill two birds with one stone or one stone with one arrow. If I get him.
Oh, this is a slow bit now.
Ooh. It's hard to get an apple to stay still on a head. Wasn't expecting this to be the hard bit. An apple to actually stay still on a head.
Oh, I wish my son didn't have fine flyaway hair. If he had nice coarse curly hair, then I'd get an apple to stay still.
Where did he get this conical skull? Where did he get such a conical skull? Hang on, he's not my son. He must be my conical headed brother. Must have had sex with my wife. He's actually not my son. So if anything, I'd rather get him in the face. This has turned out quite well. This has turned out quite well. This has turned out quite well. I get to kill my son, and it's a perfect story because no one will have an issue with the fact that it'll just clearly be an archery accident. Some people might say, why are we doing it? Some people might say, why are we doing it? Some people might say, why are we doing it? Why are we trying to shoot an air apple off your son's head?
It's something to do with my landlord. It's something to do with my landlord.
It's got something to do with my landlord.
He's kept my deposit for some reason. He says we didn't do an end of tenancy clean. We did, though, but he said you need to get a professional in. I said, why? We spent 4 hours doing it.
This is a result. So I think I get clean, or I get to sort out my situation with the landlord, and I get to kill my son. He's not my son because of my brothers. Here we go. Oh shit, I've got the apple. Oh no, I've got the apple. There was always a risk this would happen. Oh no, I've got the apple. There was always a risk that this could have happened. I'm going to have to raise this son as my own.
It's longer than you think, isn't it?
This is a big old...
It is longer than you think.
Longer than it needs to be. Oh, it's credits. One of those endings, isn't it?
Is it ending now? Or?
It's like the Dudley Moore ending.
Now we're on our way home. We're on a horse. It's a bit awkward now between me and my son. But I think I will raise him as my own.
Starring Steven Seagal.
That's the apple. Will we be able to use that for copyright reasons? Probably not.
Yeah, I don't know, really. I mean,
Give it a chuck of the dice?
Give it a chuck of the Patreon.
It might be a Patreon only.
Anyway, sorry, Mike, what are you saying?
About what?
You were saying something about William Tell, and then we played that music and we sort of went off on one.
I didn't really know, really.
Mike, were you on acid or what?
Some sort of street drug.
Blimey.
Golly.
Oh. Yeah, really good stuff, though, actually.
Really good stuff. Really good content.
Yeah. Really solid content.
So our next bit, of course, will be extra stuff from our episode about Queen Victoria.
Queen Victoria.
And I felt we were quite respectful from memory.
Yes. I think that was respect born largely of ignorance.
Yes. I think you're right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Although, shall I let you in on a secret?
Go on.
It's not really a secret. I got a message from Greg Jenner, BBC historian.
Oh, yeah?
On Instagram saying, oh, I really enjoyed that episode. And I said, thank you, Greg. 100% historically accurate? ? He replied, 100%.
Oh.
Is he just being nice? We'll never know.
He didn't say 100%. He didn't say what it was 100% of.
No, clever Greg.
Clever Greg. Always clever one Greg. Step ahead.
clever Greg. He's all he said is 100%, and he's thinking or looking at a bowl of turds. And he's thinking it's 100% turds is what it is.
But he's too nice to say that.
So he could have meant 100% inaccurate as well.
He could have said, yeah.
Yeah.
We don't know, and we never will know, because we our researchers won't tell us, as they don't exist.
I mean, I was sceptical when, Mike, you said that you thought Queen Victoria invented reggae.
Yes.
Mm.
Yes.
You really stuck to that, but I don't know.
You thought it was ska, didn't you?
Yeah, I think it's all dance hall or something. It's not the same.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we all agreed, though, that she was important in the Northern Soul movement. Didn't we? Yeah. I mean, I think it's interesting, though, is I think we do have mixed... We have a mixed relationship with Queen Victoria and with the Victorians in general. I think on the one hand, we think that there's some Queen Victoria. And fade it. And then
fade it out.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Fade that out.
Anyway, here's some more stuff from our Queen Victoria episode.
You betcha.
I think about views is interesting because you think about what a view is. If you don't think of the view as a thing, it's just some stuff that's very far away, isn't it? Which you can't see properly.
Mm. Yeah.
So what they're saying is, no, that's what you're looking at. That is a bit of a, that's a change in human perception, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because normally, if you didn't have a concept of a view, you'd go, I can't see it, it's miles away.
Mm-hmm.
But what the Victorians
What are you looking at?
Yeah. Well, the Victorians say, you're already looking at it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, just slip that bra off my ankles. And let's do a thing which we've just invented called French kissing.
Let's buy some matches off this child and go and light some candles.
But for something to be a view, there has to be nothing in between you and it. Because otherwise you just look at the stuff that's in between you and...
Unless it's a window or a telescope.
Unless it's a window.
Or the Angel of the North.
Yep.
Or the Angel of the North.
Yeah.
But generally speaking, a view means there's nothing between you and the horizon.
Yeah.
Or not a lot.
Yeah.
If there's a lot between you and the horizon, like now, there's loads of stuff between me and the horizon. There's, yeah. There's my laptop.
There is a view. You just can't see it.
There is, exactly. There is a view, but I can't see it. So what they're saying is, essentially, and probably there's a lot of them in Scotland, because there's a lot of countryside.
Mm.
So there's a lot of... So previously people went, there's nothing here. We could build a tin mine,
yeah.
whatever you were saying.
Let's rebrand it.
Let's say rebrand.
This is actually a view.
And it's kind of the emperor's new thing to look at.
Mm-hmm.
You could argue, couldn't you? Because what are you actually looking at?
Okay.
The horizon.
So you're saying there's a population control element going on.
Oh, well, I hadn't thought of that. How would that work?
Well, it's like making it popular. Don't think about your hardships. In your wool factory.
Yeah. You know. Just look out the window at nothing.
Look at that for a bit.
Yeah.
That's the new hobby, the new passion.
Yeah.
Mm. But I think it was also to do with the fact they were building cities that were so horrible.
Right.
That suddenly going to the countryside was quite a nice thing to do, whereas before it was just...
Okay. Before the countryside was just a place where you just lived and had a farm that was about the size of your torso.
Yeah.
And toiled away.
And died at the age of 15.
Over a single turnip. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think your life expectancy was probably much higher than if Victorian era was like everyone moved to a city, got cholera, and had to work in a kind of grinding mill. It was a really shit deal.
Although you say that those cities were horrible, Ben, but now they're considered like really bijou and lovely, aren't they? Anything that's Victorian or towns with Victorian.
Oh, with original features.
With original features.
Oh.
Yeah. With an original,
You saying it was worth it?
Well, I don't know. I'm just saying it's interesting the way times change and our perspectives shift, isn't it? It's a really, really interesting thing that I said, isn't it? It's one of those.
Welcome to Perspectives with Henry Packer.
Can you play the interesting thing jingle? but now, because before there'd be like a sort of home cholera,
home cholera suite.
Yeah. A home cholera sort of incineration box to sort of shovel your kids into as they had a cholera. And now that'd be like a sort of, like a sourdough pizza oven. Isn't it? Everything gets re-jiggled. There's something about her that's quite touching, that a bit like normal people. She loved her husband and mourned for him in a simple way by just wearing black and building a ginormous concert hall in his name and a massive, huge, solid gold statue next to it.
and a dinky little museum in Exeter.
Well, the Exeter V&A?
Well, it's the Royal Albert Memorial Museum, the RAM.
Oh.
That's our museum.
Yeah. She also famously named a gentle piercing after him.
Indeed. I wondered if we'd come to that.
Yeah, that's true.
Mm.
Uh-oh.
Lewd content warning. Lewd content.
Hey, hey, hey!
I'm not 100% sure what that piercing is. Is it just through the old boy?
Sort of transversely through the old boy. Ideally avoiding the urethra, I understand.
Oh, God.
For obvious reasons.
Yeah.
But I don't know what the... Yeah. I mean, the myth is that he had one. I find that hard to believe.
There's no way he had one.
I think if you want to show your sort of how much you value the royals, just buy a simple mug or a decorative plate would be my advice.
Well, then jam it through your penis.
Jam it through your mouth.
Yeah. Because it's not in the crown jewels, isn't it? There's no sort of... There's no sort of famous sort of rubled strewn sort of painting.
Ruby strewn.
Yeah.
Sort of lance that goes sideways through the...
exactly.
Oh, God, I've just looked it up. Oh, no. Right. Oh, no.
Have you found something?
Oh, no.
Is it bad?
Is it true? Did he have one, but it was used as a cure for something?
No, I'm just thinking loads of pictures of people with Prince Albert.
Oh, no. Why would you do that?
What's wrong with that?
Also, Mike, it's not what you were saying.
Is it not?
It's not what you were saying.
It's not lengthways.
Why did he lie to us, Mike?
Is it lengthways?
What are we dealing with?
Oh, God.
Does it have Prince Albert's face on it?
What is it? Is it like a hinge?
Is it a mini version of the Albert Hall and your sort of your knob comes through it as if it's coming on stage?
Paint me a picture. Paint me a picture with your words, Ben. I don't want to look it up.
Okay. It's a ring.
Yeah.
It goes in one hole that you've created and goes out another hole that God created.
Oh, my God. Your aim is going to be all over the shop,
isn't it?
That sounds
very painful indeed. That sounds desperately painful.
That's absolutely...
Yeah.
Oh.
There's a lot of blurred out photos I've got. I seem to have put my own parental locks on. It's probably a good thing.
Oh, blimey.
We've never sort of reverted to this level of chat, but
yeah,
£2 million on the table.
Yeah.
Go and get yourself a Prince Albert in the next hour.
And you don't mean like a little decorative figurine?
I don't mean a little figurine.
When you say the next hour, is it just... Is this being done by a professional, just by whoever you can find who's willing to do it in the next hour? Because
well,
that might be tricky.
I'll be the judge of that when I examine the final job you've done of it, okay. Whether it qualifies.
I don't think I would. I don't think I could do that, even though obviously that amount of money is just...
I'm just wondering, because in London, there's tattoo artists all over the
shop. I could find someone to do it.
Oh, I see. Okay, so
that's not the problem.
It's not the logistics. Okay.
Yeah, no, I could have that happen to me, but I'm...
So do you think if you went into a tattoo artist slash piercing place and said, I want a Prince Albert, see, I think there should be a series of tests you have to do. So you can't just do that on a whim.
Right.
I think there should be, it's like a general knowledge question about the Victorians.
Yeah. Okay.
This bridge, Victorian, Edwardian.
Mm-hmm. Georgian.
Williamordian.
Futuristic.
German language test.
German language test.
Yeah. A sort of a version of the knowledge for taxi drivers, but of the city of Battenberg.
Yeah, and I think also you should be able to actually draw a detailed map of the various capillaries and tubes on the inside of the human knob, so that you understand what you're dealing with. Then sing the national
cooling off period.
Cooling off period. Then sing the national anthem in Welsh.
Right. Which national anthem? The Welsh one.
It's not specified. That's part of the test. Gosh, that's an extreme, extreme choice, isn't it?
Alex writes, Mike is correct. I found a deer stuck in the barbed wire fence on the edge of Rowan Atkinson's property here in the Chilterns.
Ah. Mm-hmm.
I called the RSPCA.
Yeah.
The agent met me at my house. We all three went to the site. Who's three?
Rowan Atkinson, sounds like.
Oh, right, so Alex, the guy from the RSPCA, and Rowan Atkinson.
That's what's implied.
That's what's implied.
There's just lots of questions here, aren't there?
Yeah, yeah.
There are lots of questions. Yeah. It's intriguing.
Now dark, my dog Dora and I showed her the way.
Maybe Dora is the third player.
By the way, is anyone else here just imagining Rowan Atkinson as Mr. Bean? Because that's what I am.
I was imagining Rowan Atkinson as Dora.
You've got... Okay.
Yeah.
So it's quite confusing. There's a kind of roving Atkinson face in this anecdote. You place it where you want. Yeah. It's got to be somewhere.
So my dog Dora and I showed her the way. She said to stand some distance away. We heard a gunshot. All done. Very professional. Keep donating to the RSPCA, Alex.
Okay. What did they do with the body, did they say?
I've got a feeling that Mr. Bean probably had to dispose of the body and it all went a bit horribly wrong. I've still got a hoof sticking out of my top pocket. I'm allowed to make these noises for some reason. Oh, no, I've now killed a goose. Yeah.
All right.
Imagine it all ended like that.
Henry?
Oh, dear.
I don't know if that's legal to say, is it, Henry?
Methinks maybe have committed treason there. Oh, but still. Good. I think it was worth it because it was good, good fun stuff.
Anyway, you've made it this far through Extra Beans. I imagine it's been something of a slog. But you're reaching the summit.
Yes, of Mount Bean.
It's true.
What I'm trying to get onto is that we talked about hiking.
Yeah, hiking. Yeah, is to walking what Petonk is to marbles.
Very good. Very good. Yes.
So hiking is to walking what firing a harpoon is to javelin?
Yes.
Yeah. It's what buying a big pair of trousers is to buying a smaller pair. Yeah,
yes. I think. So we got it. Eventually we got to the right one. Yes, that's the perfect analogy. Yeah. What a relief.
It's the Goldilocks zone, that one, isn't it? It's not too whimsical. It's rooted in real things. Trap people know about trousers. They get it. It's a funny word. The idea's clever, but not too clever.
It's not too clever.
It's never. Never too clever.
Anyway, here's some more stuff from our episode about hiking.
There we go.
We need to bring this introduction to a close, but I feel like we haven't really answered many questions about where you actually are. What is this room?
We've tried to pod when I've been on the move before in hotels, and that it's always naff Wi-Fi. So I'm in a sort of, I think it's a former glassworks. It's one of those. It's some industrial place that someone's turned into a bunch of like little offices you can rent. So I've rented a little tiny office room in a basement for the morning.
I'm hoping you're not in an actual glassworks factory.
I don't know because I got here before anyone else, I think. So I don't know what's going on upstairs.
Because I remember a story we were told as kids about the little French boy that climbed into a paper factory and fell asleep in one of the machines.
Oh, yeah.
The next day, his parents got the daily newspaper and it was their son's face on it because he'd been spliced like ham into every edition of that day's paper.
Oh, I see. No, I don't know what you mean. Yeah, I thought you meant there's a children's book about a kind of a paper thin boy.
Oh, Flat Stanley.
Flat Stanley, that's it, yeah. You're talking about an absolute sort of horror show urban myth thing.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it could be that by the end of the afternoon I'm incorporated into a series of tumblers. I don't know. But I'm here now.
Well, can I say, Mike, I would happily take a quaff from one of those tumblers and drink to your memory. But then probably wouldn't get it out that often after that. It'd probably,
it's down to the Oxfam, isn't it?
Well, yeah. Or gathering dusk, I was thinking in the same shelf that where all my old ramekins that come free with goo desserts go.
Put a tiny cactus in it.
Maybe put a tiny cactus in it.
Yeah.
But has it got you feeling businesslike?
I don't mind it. I've got to say, I feel like I could get something done here if I didn't have to talk to you lot.
Ben, when you were talking about squaring up to this guy...
I didn't square up to this guy. I politely asked him to stop screaming the C word at a scared woman in her house.
Barging up into this guy's grill. Are you happy with that? It made me think of the squaring up, which could then happen. In my mind, I'm playing this out how I would do it. And the instant solution I came to, weirdly, is what I do with spiders, which is throw a towel on them.
Right.
So you can't see the problem. Because a lot of these things, a lot of the panic that is induced is in visual stimulus. This guy's got rippling muscles. This guy's...
I don't think it's going to calm that guy down, is it? even if we're talking Egyptian cotton, it's not going to calm him down.
Oh, we are talking Egyptian cotton. We're talking 200 ply. We're talking a thread count that would make Cleopatra blush. Whatever the fuck that means. But that's what we're talking about. Yeah. But it's not about calming him down. I'm not expecting him to go to sleep like a cute little baby as soon as there's a towel on him. The towel goes on him.
That's not
what you do with babies. Please don't. Yeah. Henry, as he's often done in the past, confused budgerigars with babies. It's not the same thing. It's not the same approach.
Yes.
No. Do not try and get a budgie to latch onto your breast.
And don't try and funnel little seeds and nuts down the gullet of a human baby child.
Babies do not like dried cuttlefish.
Yet. But also, yeah, Henry Pecker's baby care book, The Budgerigar Method, is available, but don't necessarily buy it. I mean, it's a radical rethinking of them.
Not even you're able to endorse it.
I legally can't. And with a clean conscience, I can't dispute that legal position. Well, with a clean conscience or a dirty conscience, I just can't dispute it because the whole thing's tied up in the Dutch courts at the moment. What I would say though is so people have different methods of self defense and stuff, and my instinct was towel on him like a spider, and then what I do with the spider is I jump on top of the towel and trample the entire surface area of the towel. Trample, mm-hmm. trample here, trample there, trample everywhere, trample hither, trample thither. Which is, well, that's chapter 5 of my Budgerigar parenting book. Mm-hmm. I trample all over it. And then, of course, So it's even. And then you remove the towel, and then that man you are fronting up against will just be a sort of small, black, desiccated little, sort of spindy little corpse, which you can just drop into
the rain will deal with, presumably.
The rain will flush away.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, I certainly wouldn't put it in the bin of the person that's just shouted at someone to not put the dog food in the bin.
That would be the last thing you should do. But in terms of bin policy in general, walking down the street, do you feel you can chuck something in a bin or recycling?
No.
No, neither do I. And that's why I was asking the question, because it's important that people don't feel they should be able to do that. Just because if someone's recycling bin happens to be out and you happen to have a fruit pastel wrapper in your hand and you could just drop it in like that, doesn't cost anyone, the council take it away. That is not, is it? Is that the, how is that as a thought? The thought that the council could take it away for free. Well, how is that as a thought?
Thin end of the wedge.
Exactly.
It's the thin edge of a wedge. It's the thin end.
Before you know it.
It's the thin end of the wedge. Because the trouble is, you don't know if you might be dealing with a bin of someone who's been burned in the past, for example, with an errant turd or some other business.
There's bin history. So
this history, you don't know the history that you're dealing with. It's just, you know.
Yeah. So obviously, if I happen to have a crisp packet in my hand, whatever, and I'm walking down the street, I've just finished the crisps, and it happens to be the recycling bins are literally out on the pavement, and it would just be a simple move to drop that crisp packet into the recycling, and the council takes it away for free, and literally doesn't cost anyone, and it stops me littering. That is the wrong, and I agree. I wouldn't do it.
What's this thing about for free? What's this idea that the council is free? Where's that? Where's that come from?
Because Henry's not paid council tax since
2004.
Since he reclassified his student house as a public toilet, meaning that they didn't have to pay council tax.
Yeah, all right.
Stay out of other people's bins, Henry.
And other people stay out of my toilets unless they're plumbed.
Yeah. It's a deal.
So this is something I've noticed recently about Londoners, which I know this has been true for a long time in society, but it's happening more and more now. I'm really noticing it, which is you walk around and everyone is talking using AirPods or the equivalent. Mm-hmm. But it's just quite an odd space it creates between people where you're walking past people. And I'm constantly going, can I help? No, but everyone is like in their own universes, but they're sharing the space with you, but they're mentally somewhere else. It's quite, sometimes it's a bit jarring, but Londoners will do, it's almost impossible to get small talk out of a Londoner. It's incredible. Like, so line bikes, for example, when you're putting line bikes away, getting line bikes, you're often in close quarters with another human being because they're dumping theirs or picking one up. And sometimes you have to help, you know, also jiggle your bike to get it around theirs, and there's nothing. There's just no, you know, a normal human being at that point would be, oh, sorry, how can I? Oh, bloody line bikes, eh? You should call them lemon bikes, if you ask me. They don't work a lot of the time. I feel like a lemon on one. I've prepared various bits of chat like that, which I did.
It's good stuff.
And it's decent stuff, isn't it?
Strong icebreakers.
I'm getting nothing back from people.
Be a smash hit down Exeter Way.
It would be, wouldn't it? There's enough lime bikes here to make a tequila if they were actual limes. A margarita. There's enough lime bikes here to make a margarita if they were actual limes. Do you want to go have a quick drink on the way? No, we're on the way to work. It's 9 a.m. Sorry, I'm only joking. What? So is that dystopian or is it fine? Because on one hand, it feels dystopian because you feel like you're being made, people are making a conversational offer to you, like someone saying hello on a walk. Someone's in front of you and they speak and you speak back, but they're talking to someone else. So it feels a bit dystopian. It feels like, oh, people can't talk to each other anymore, but they are actually talking to someone. So maybe it's fine. People are communicating, but it's not with me. Might be the issue. Now we get to
the nub of it. Yes. Okay.
Maybe that's the issue.
That's the dystopia.
But when it's happening around you, do you ever sort of go, do you ever like long for the real human connection of a friend of yours coming round to your house and shitting in a non-plumbed toilet? Just a kind of earthy, real connection.
The clear relationship between two people.
As analogue as it gets.
It's so analogue. And it was a log. Yeah. I know what you mean.
Maybe there's a happy medium.
Yeah, I think we should shoot for somewhere in between those two poles. Yeah.
You just take a piss in someone's unplumbed toilet.
There we go.
There you go.
There we go.
Well, hiking doesn't necessarily have to be in the countryside, does it? You can. What's psychogeography?
Oh, yeah.
Remember, Will Self used to go on about psychogeography a lot.
That's when you visit the birthplaces of serial killers.
You've got a mate who does that, haven't you?
I do actually. I do have a friend who used to do that, like tours of London. I guess it's about walking underneath a sort of an underpass and saying something pretentious, I guess, is it?
Was it Will Self used to walk to Heathrow?
Yes, he did.
And things like that?
He maybe walked through New York and then onto the plane and then off the plane and then home or something.
When I was in Dusseldorf recently, I could have walked to the airport. It would have taken me an hour and a half. I thought that's within walking
doable,
distance,
isn't it?
Yeah, and there's something quite weird about walking to an airport and getting on a plane.
Yes, I think you'd probably lose your nerve right towards the end, probably. Somewhere near the perimeter fence, you'd start to lose your nerve.
Yeah, and it gets a bit A-roady.
You get a bit A-roady and a bit, I feel like there'd be a risk that someone would just sort of sweep you up and he's causing trouble this guy.
Or the security geese would flock onto you.
Exactly.
And your screams would be completely drowned out by the honking.
Exactly, and you couldn't blame them because
That's what they're there for.
It's not a pedestrianised area. You're not supposed to be there on foot.
That's why one of them has scalped you and is going around wearing your haircut. Oh. He's a funny-looking goose now, Ben.
Pretty sexy goose.
He's quite a sexy goose. We did a hiking trip from my school along the Cornish coast. Mm-hmm. That's really been seared in my memory. It's funny how things at that age do. I think it was the first time I'd seen grass.
And of course, limestone.
And of course, limestone, which blew my absolute mind.
Your mindstone.
It blew my mindstone off. The sheer possibilities of limestone and what it might mean if a lot of the soil in an area leaks into limestone beds. It just grasps the imagination of a child, doesn't it? I don't need the Star Wars trilogy. Yeah, it was the first time I'd seen grass. It was the first time I'd been inside a building that wasn't either my home or a theatre. And I remember just how cold and wet it was. Mm. It was incredibly cold and wet. And the other thing I remember was staying in youth hostels and not liking Daddy Longlegs's because they can't control where they're going. They might go into my neck.
I think they can't they? They can't control where they're going.
They do seem to, they do look like they're kind of listing left and right, don't they?
They do, yeah, they move erratically. But I think that's voluntary listing.
I think it's voluntary. So they're actually just bloody-minded.
I think so, yeah.
Are they trying to freak you out, do you think?
I think they're trying to freak me out. But the other thing I liked was the fact that in the countryside, we got to go to newsagents where they were trialling new forms of chocolate, which they trial in the regions before bringing into the big cities.
Yeah.
Which is something we've talked about before. I think I had a Spira, for example, before anyone else had a Spira.
Missed the Spira.
Yeah.
Very fond of the Spira.
Yeah, they're gone now, haven't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Honestly, give us a cashew themed hat to wear because we are a couple of we're three nuts in a aren't we?
Nutty head.
Oh, give us a nutcracker because I'm a stir crazy. Give us a nuts. Hot nuts.
Oh, salt and roast us.
Salt and roast us, because we are three nuts in a bag.
Anyway, that's Extra Beans for this month. Thank you for your support. Thanks for listening.
Thanks very much.
Thank you. Cheerio.
And goodbye.
Thank you. Bye.